Hi, and welcome to another Designing Open Democracy podcast retrospective. This is an old recording that was held on the 21st of October 2017 as part of an event called Citizens Democracy. We actually also released a previous podcast recording on this same event on behalf of another speaker called Nicholas Groen, who was talking about his own take on citizens, juries, and deliberative democracy. As like before, this event was sponsored by the York Butter Factory, a co-working space in Melbourne, as well as being hosted by Brian Koo and Nicholas Moran. The speaker today will be Hubertus Hofchicker, who's the Australian chief futurist and CEO of Predicly. He also started a political party called Austrian GILT to try and push through his new system of citizen juries, and through this talk you will learn about how Predicly was started, as well as this notion of a deliberative model, and how technologies can, such as sentiment analysis, can be used to help enhance such a model. What he will also talk about is how, through allowing for specialization, what you allow is to increase the political bandwidth that citizen juries can provide to the political system. Just so you know, this audio was taken over a Skype recording, so the audio may not be as good as it could be. However, hopefully you will be able to get the most important points across from his presentation. Enjoy the speech. We shall start with a quick background introduction by Hubertus Hofchicker himself.
So before I start with that story, maybe shortly, why am I doing that? Just from my background, I used to be an investment banker in last millennium in the IT space, high-tech space, and then founded the first online brokerage in Austria, which then expanded to Central Eastern Europe, which got overtaken later by an Austrian bank, and became then, luckily, the CEO of one of the Austrian telecom companies. Not the largest one, actually the smallest of four, but still it was a interesting job because it was almost bankrupt when I had to take the job, so it was not easy. But the team and I, we effectively structured it with over some like 3 years, and in the end it got bought by Deutsche Telekom for about 1.5 billion euros. So it was kind of a nice deal, and I've been a serial entrepreneur ever since. And one of the project which I'm currently in, called Predicly, effectively the idea of it originated in the time of when I was running the online broker, because the world was truly mad at that moment. It was the time of the internet bubble, and some of you may remember that the stock exchange valuations for some of these new internet companies just went completely haywire. Little internet companies, which were co-founded by media companies, all of a sudden were worth more than media companies which had been around for dozens of years and then had a huge market valuation. And I think what's important to know is I, at the time, looked at some of these things and thought, okay, these valuations are completely crazy. And still, while knowing that, I fell into the trap of believing this general madness and acting according to it. So I made a couple of good investments, but I also made a couple of bad investments where I had known that I shouldn't do that. And Nick mentioned before the problem of that in surveys people sometimes say what they think before they think, and it's a big problem which you can realize everywhere. We see it in the stock exchange when there are hype cycles. We see it regularly before elections. I'm going to talk about that. So we know how parties and the leadership acts to get our votes, that they do dirty campaigning, that they're lying, that they're making promises which they're never going to keep. And still, people don't change. They vote for these people. They vote for these practices. And Predicly is a project which seems to be succeeding now, to stop the collective madness, to not produce a crowd which is mad, like Sigmund Freud would have us know, because Sigmund Freud, the Austrian psychologist, thought that crowds, once they cluster, they become stupid and irrational, violent. designated the Austrian School of Economics, of which Schumpeter, which Nick already mentioned, is one, thought that if you put them in proper processes, there's something evolving which we call collective intelligence. Yeah? So the trick to make people think is to give them tools which don't produce madness, but which raise collective intelligence. And as Nick also explained already, that most of the tools, all of the tools which we have right now on the internet, Twitter, Facebook particularly, they do not do that. They rather help with mobbing, creating mobs, as you can saw in this comment section. It's not designed to make people think. So that said, one of the spin-offs which we had from, I'm also part of the Hayek Institute, which is so to say an institute which keeps up Austrian economics, like the tradition of the more scientific economists like Schumpeter, Mises, and Hayek. And about a year and a half ago, we did a spin-off called New Demarchy, which essentially thinks that we should not have party democracy anymore, because you have an agency problem in parties, which has been recognized already 100 years ago, actually, by somebody who called it the iron law of oligarchy, essentially meaning that if there's an organization, a party, in the end, after a little while, that party will serve not its original mission, but it will serve the people running it, which pretty much, I think, describes what parties do. And here in Europe, we already had a very bad experience after the discovery of this iron law of oligarchy, because that was in 1910, and by 1934, 1938, half of Europe had reacted according to this law of oligarchy. We had people like Hitler in, you heard about him already, there was Mussolini in Italy, there was Franco in Spain. So this theory turned out to be a rather robust theory, and so to say, my fear is if it happens again, and these people will fall ultimately, but while they fall, they now have atom bombs at their disposition. So I'm not particularly looking forward to the next instance of the law of oligarchy striking. And we believe it will strike. Because, for instance, in Austria, I don't know, the same let me just share my screen with you for a moment. I don't know whether it's the same in Australia, but like Australia, Austria is one of the probably most well-off countries in the world. And still, when we ask the people, sorry, this is in German, unfortunately, but I'll translate it to you, how happy are the Austrians are going to be with the next elected government, you could see that they were actually expecting to be quite dissatisfied. And still, everybody elected the same. And Predicky, which is this platform I built over the last couple of years, which fosters this thinking, effectively, they recognize that, but if we ask them in a normal poll, they think after the election, it's all going to be better, which is really, really weird. So if you ask them 1 year after the elections, do you think things will be better? The answer is here green. Once you make them think, they say no, it's not going to be better. And with Predicky, we have a deliberative format down where people essentially have to first bet what it's going to be. So they don't just say it, they don't just tick a box, they have to bet, which is when the brain starts to switch into a different type of thinking, a slower type of thinking, but a more deliberative type of thinking. And we ask them after this bet, which they do, just show you this here. And so they have to essentially put little bets here with virtual currency, whether they think the Austrians are going to be rather more happy or more unhappy. And then once they've done that, they are prompted to put the reason to why this is being done so. And this is, again, something going back to Sigmund Freud. Once you've done something which is very simple and you need to justify it, afterwards you start thinking. It's called post-rationalization. It's a very important principle. So whatever you did, your brain afterwards will tell you, okay, you did it intentional because of some fantastic reason, or if it went wrong, your brain will work out a reason why it should have been a fantastic thing and just some silly idea prevented your fantastic thought, your fantastic immediate action to be true, post-rationalization. Anyway, and what the system does with that, by the way, it then text annotates. So you can see down here how people argue more and more why they're going to be, so to say, dissatisfied. And you can see people write rather longish comments on that system now because it's able to do that and engages people in the conversation. And one of the algorithms we wrote in the background then discloses this conversation into a sentiment analysis. So you can see down here in the rated comments that people mostly thought that we're rather dissatisfied. Quite a few thought that we're very dissatisfied. And only very few people thought they would be satisfied. And then the system effectively dissects all the arguments in why this would be like that. And you can see the overall reason why people thought they were dissatisfied after thinking about it, they said everything will remain as it was. And so you can see that this is the very deep red bar. It caused a lot of the most dissatisfaction and a lot of the rather dissatisfied. And anything else, I think it didn't even matter so much. So it didn't matter that the Austrian administration is so slow, that the people are frustrated about the election choices, that the election promises are not being kept. But the issue is, people are most dissatisfied that everything will remain the same. So we decided in our Austrian economist group that we wanted to start an initiative which we called New Democracy, which essentially tries to introduce, instead of the representative democracy system with its iron law of oligarchy, which will result in the next atom war, I think, a system. And we were very aware that it couldn't just be any old democratic system, because we had observed, like Nick, the Brexit. And do you know, guys, after the day after the people in the UK decided that they wanted to exit the EU, Google announced their most frequent search of the day after. Do you know what it was?
What is the EU?
What is
this? Exactly. Yeah? The British people predominantly asked, what is the EU? After the day that the majority voted to leave it. And there was another example just at the time when we thought about that, which was the Greek referendum on the EU savings package, yeah, where the EU wanted austerity measures in Greece to essentially save the economy. And the people, with 62%, voted against it. And 2 weeks later, Tsipras, the prime minister, simply went, yeah, okay, people are here, you voted against it, we changed this little by-sentence, and now we're doing it, we agree. So the worst thing about this Greek referendum was actually that, and I was in Greece at the time on a holiday when the ATM stopped working. Actually, it just stopped working for me because I had demagnetized my card, but I had to think that it was already switched off. Anyway, but there were some interviews in the national television, and one of the ladies who was interviewed, how are you going to vote about this Greek? Should we do the saving package? Should we not do it? In the open, the lady started to cry and said, I have no clue. I don't know what it means if I say yes. I don't know what will happen if I say no. So there's a certain amount of limited capacity to ask everybody. So we knew we needed something else. And we decided in the end that the best tool we could find so far was, again, citizen juries, like Nick already mentioned. However, we added to the recipe an open phase of surveying, of inquiry, which give everybody the possibility to chip in their 2 cents, to say what they mean, but in a deliberative format, which I've shown you before. So that was our recipe, and then we thought, okay, but how are we going to get people to participate? I guess the question is, and some of you may know that already, what is the biggest motivator for people to participate in democracy?
In Australia, we make them. In Australia, we fine them if they don't vote.
Yeah, you got it all, I know, yeah. No, but absence of force and violence, what's the best way to motivate people to
economic incentive
people to participate in democracy?
Someone said economic incentive.
Well, I tell you, what they found out, that the overriding requirement is that what people say, what they decide, actually matters.
Sure.
Yeah, that these decisions are being implemented. That's the one big motivator. And ever since I knew about that, I've been observing all kinds of votes and things, and I'm just amazed how many never go to action and are being ignored. Because essentially, politicians think that people are too stupid to decide anything. Yeah, if you ask a politician if people should get more say, the one answer you get is, no, they're too stupid, they have no idea, they're all psychopaths, still. And we don't think it's true, and I think particularly in Australia, you guys have done a lot of experimentation, which is extremely well documented, and there have been others since in Ireland and in the UK, and we've just done two in Austria. So we decided we need to implement it in such a way that whatever happens out of these decisions actually matter. So we started to look to working with a party to make them use the citizens' juries, which we called Bürgerparlamente, so citizen parliaments. And you'd think that they would have liked that, because, okay, I mean, then they know what the people really want, they can put forward their program and know that the Austrians will be very happy doing what the citizen parliaments. But no, we approached three parties and all of them declined to use that tool, partly because people are too stupid, and I think in reality, because the leading people there, they all have cushy, well-paying jobs, and they were kind of fearing that they would put themselves out of work, which, frankly, I think they would. So it was a rational fear for them, who are the decision makers, but it's not a good solution for Austria. Luckily, I ran into a man called Roland Dürner, who was just about to found a party, so he had not yet a position of power. And this was this guilt thing which Nick just mentioned. So far too late in June this year, we finally decided, okay, guilt is going to adopt this model, which was, the election was last Sunday, so which was 3 months ago, so we had 3 months to work out the idea, to communicate it to the people, which was a bit of a problem because Roland Dürener was before running around more with the concept like Beppe Grillo in Italy, which means telling people, okay, the system is shit, just protest against it, put your vote here that you hate the system, vaffanculo, lecz mi hamorsch, or kiss my backside, that was the title of the party. So we had only 3 months to change that into something a little bit more productive, which I'm going to show you now, 1 second. So this is the concept which we effectively is happening today. Is that so in general, you vote every 5 years, yes, which gives you about 10 to 12 votes in your whole lifetime, and probably 1 or 2 months in front of each of these election dates where politicians care at least what you think as a mob, yeah, because all they do in the election campaigns is they're trying to emotionalize us with, you know, 1 9-second sound bits, as Nick already said. And then they're in parliament, and then for 5 years they effectively couldn't really care less of what you want. And of course there's a lot of happening behind the scenes. So what we propose is the following, is that essentially everybody can participate in an open ideation phase of solutions to exist to such solutions as the citizens come up with. And the key behind it is a kind of voting system where every problem is rated, whether it's an important problem or not an important problem, whether a solution is a good solution or not a solution, or whether an objection to a solution is a good objection or an irrelevant objection. And out of that, you can actually calculate an index which will automatically, from all the thousands of ideas and problems which people report, always give you a couple which are on top because of the importance of the problems or the quality of the solution and the little objections which exist. There's a second open phase where then each of these proposed solution ideas is meeting an open inquiry where everybody can participate, which would be part a traditional questionnaire, which has a lot of problems, as we know, but people are pretty good in responding to diagnostics. So if you ask four questions, are you a man, are you a woman, people typically know. But even if you ask, okay, what will a coin toss result in 5 minutes, there will be have a huge bias. If I ask now, I'm going to survey people, Hubertus is tossing a coin, will it be heads or tails, or will it be tails or heads, to randomize it, you will get a response of 68% of people that my coin toss will result in heads, because of a very simple bias. So anybody following the survey would think that coins have three sides and two of them are heads, which is of course rubbish. So we use it in a very limited way, and then for prognostics we use the prediction market, which I just showed you, which is a much more deliberative format. Now the other problem we had to solve was this preconception, which not only politicians have, by the way, not only politicians think that the people are too stupid to decide. Even people think that 90% of the other people are less competent in any area of topic than themselves. It's a huge issue. Of course, it can't be true, because intelligence and knowledge is normally distributed, and it follows a nice Gauss curve, but it's a problem. Anyway, so we're using Prediki also to find out, so to say, who is knowledgeable in a topic or not. And we do that by effectively comparing the prediction of people with what actually happened. Because there's quite a lot of scientific evidence, meanwhile, that people who are better in predicting what will happen are actually also much better decision makers. There's a highly recommendable book issued 2015 by professor from the US called Philip Tetlock. It's called Super Forecasting. Yeah. And it effectively shows how people who are tainted by ideology, by one big idea, get it all wrong when they have to say what will happen. Like me, maybe I'm getting it completely all wrong if I think that the world will be atom bombed after the next round of dictators. Maybe it never will happen. Anyway, but so if you are a socialist, you think you have a certain look at the world. If you are too much capitalist, you have and you're generally wrong. Yeah, Tetlock calls these guys hedgehogs, because they just take a position and then they don't move. Whereas he calls the more intelligent people who are flexible, he calls them the foxes. So the fox knows many tricks, and these foxes also make better decisions. And the mechanism can actually rank people according to how good their predictions are. And if you're negative over a series, then we know most likely you're not such a good decision maker. So that's, where was I? Yeah, that's this principle of expert identification. And on the other hand, we don't want to restrict people. Everybody is good in something. It's like Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame, but each of us, while probably not being the best in anything, each of us is very good in one or two particular things, and which effectively means that we don't need to exclude even anybody from participating in citizen juries, because there's no need to restrict the capacity. We can have hundreds and thousands of those things in parallel, and as long as we make sure that the right people go into the right parliament where they decide the right things, we could have an enormous bandwidth. Yeah, like in Austria, we have 8 million of us. So if only 1% of people participated, because everybody's busy, but 1%, that's 80,000 people. And if we just replicate our parliament, which is just under 200 people, we could have 400 parliaments in parallel. Now, imagine the speed which you can have and how you can actually drive the old parliament to more speed and get things done. So that's roughly the idea. And we tested that already. We tested our own idea according to the same principles with an open survey. And that was the outcome in the prediction market. Let me just see here where was it.
Can
we wrap this up in like a couple of minutes? Is that too?
Okay, so
yeah.
So how many minutes we have?
2 minutes. Is that?
Okay, then I'll go faster.
No, that's okay. Sure.
We had the people. We had the people decide which democratic concept, so to say, will win. And then we held the first citizen jury about which topic the party should actually do, which also came out quite well. So we had one day where people decided it's not this whole immigration issue which people really wanted to have resolved, because it's just an emotionalizing topic of the parties who want to get into people's heads. But in reality, it was the education system which needed rather quick fixing. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we did beat about five of the, so to say, we were the largest of the small parties who were not yet in parliament. We beat the communists with a budget of just about 120,000 euros. We got about 1% and about double as much as the Communist Party. The elections were very difficult because everybody was emotionalized by immigration, that the Greens even fell out of parliament. It came from 12%. And they got only 3.8%, so they didn't make the 4% hurdle.
Sure.
And, well, we're actually quite happy with our 1%, also because the learning experience was huge. So for the next election which we're going to participate, we know what we're going to do different. Yeah? We will make sure that we beforehand get a sufficient budget, which we now have a number for. We will do a process, not by random, but we'll actually do a competitive process to find a couple of activists who are able to present the idea in the national media. We would hold at least 5 citizen juries before, so that we can go into the election campaign with a couple of topic ideas instead of just the idea, let's change democracy. Because face it, nobody is interested in democracy, funnily enough. Everybody assumes that it works. This technicality which I've just shown is of interest maybe to 1.5% of people in your country, as you can see, because your room is very small. You're just a couple of people. The word is about, I don't know, taxes. The room would possibly be overflowing. So anyway, we need to already have 5 citizen juries ready, by which we can tell the population what this new party, this deliberative party, actually wants. Yeah, and I think that's about it. A bit more money, the right candidates, and 3 topics, and I think next time we're going to make the hurdle. Anyway, thanks, guys.
So I hope you enjoyed the speech and that you learned something new about Hubertus Hofchicker and his group. And that, most importantly, that you learned that democracy is not just an effort that is only in Australia, but is a worldwide effort as well. So that being said, I hope to hear your feedback. You can reach us at contact@designingopendemocracy.com. Thank you very much and hope to hear from you next time. Cheers.